Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to Friday. It's the last day of the week. It feels like the second day of the week, but it's the last day of the week, technically, heading into a weekend. We got a sound effect for that. Hit it, man. Friday! Yes, indeed. Welcome to it. Congratulations on making it to the end of what has probably been a very short week. But nonetheless, I'm sure you're exhausted and ready for Saturday. So with that being said, JP's on the board. Hey, man, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm ready to watch some more football Saturday.
You just need more of it.
You can't get enough of it.
And we got some pretty good basketball going on right now.
Yeah, too. We do as well. The SEC conference play is about to start up, so I'm excited for that, too.
And what's Auburn ranked, number two right now?
Number two. A lot of people think they should be number one, but they're number two.
Yeah. All right, listen, we got a great show laid on for you. So coming up at 3:30 in studio, I got three ladies coming in, two of whom you already know. One of them is Emily Jones, who is the founder of Moms for Liberty in Madison. She's also the host of one of our podcasts, which is called The Controversial Mom. So Emily Jones. And then, of course, Lee from Huntsville. Everybody knows Lee from Huntsville. She's a guest host on this show. She's a frequent flyer here. She comes in every Thursday and does Butters and Lee. And then they're bringing in a third with them who is now their partner in an effort that they've got going on to work on Title IX issues. And you'll meet her. Her name is Dee. She's a former Division I athlete from the University of Alabama. But the three ladies of STIX, I'm calling it STIX, I don't know what else to call it, but it stands for Saving Title IX, as in the IX being the Roman numeral 9. So Saving Title IX, that's the group they've just formed, and they are working right now to begin developing the fight, if you will, sort of jumping into the fray. And we're going to talk to them about what it means to save Title IX. They'll be here for a full hour, I believe, starting at 3:30, so stand by for that. Should be good. And then I got a triple dipper bar none, so hit it, buddy.
The Triple Dipper, three stories you've got to know.
That's right, the Triple Dipper, three stories, three themes, if you will, that you got to know as we run today's show. So first out the gate, annexations with a question mark. Like, annexations? Like, the state of Canada? The annexation of Greenland? The retaking of the Panama Canal? What is going on right now? What is this discussion all about? What are we saying? Is Trump really going to do it? We'll talk about it. Annexations, number one on the Triple Dipper. Number two, in conjunction with the ladies coming in studio, we'll talk about saving Title IX. You may be surprised to find out the Biden administration, because they finally read the room, recanted on some of their efforts to abuse Title IX by letting transgenders play in women's sports. But the fight's not over. There is still plenty left to do, including, oh, by the way, with the NCAA, which can't seem to get their act together. So saving Title IX, that's number two on the Triple Dipper. And then number three, assuming I even have time for it, I got to get on this topic I had sitting on the desk since yesterday. I got a whole stack of jackassery. Yeah, we're going to talk about some jackassery. It's just unbelievable the amount of jackassery out there, especially when you consider that the head of all the jackassery just took another vacation, Joe Biden, sitting down there in St. Croix. Isn't that wonderful? 3 weeks left on his job, but he's going to take a paid vacation to go down to St. Croix. All right, more on that. We got plenty where that came from, and I will talk about all of it through the Triple Dipper in the show today. But let me jump on into the opening monologue, the Right Side Way monologue, brought to you every day by attorney Stan McDonald, partner at the law firm of Wilmer & Lee. I'll tell you more about Stan McDonald later, but right now, just know this, the Right Side Way daily monologue, brought to you by attorney Stan McDonald. All right, let's talk about Panama. There's been a lot of talk lately about the Panama Canal. I mean, it's been on nobody's radar until Trump raised eyebrows by announcing in a classic meme tweet that the U.S. ought to consider taking back the Panama Canal. And you might wonder what all the fuss is. I mean, why do we care? Why would Trump even say something like that about a mere canal? Well, if you're asking that question, then you don't know your history. If you don't know the history of the Panama Canal, then you don't know how important it is to our actual daily lives even now. And that it took a strength of will, and it came at a great cost. And America, by the way, changed the entire world when we dug that canal. But let me back up a bit. I'll start by giving you a frame of reference here. One of my favorite passages in the Bible is often referred to as a story of Jonathan and his armor bearer. Oh, man, it's such a great story. It's a battlefield story. It's a story of heroism. It's a story of getting something big done against even bigger odds. It's also, by the way, a story that clearly illustrates that sometimes the issue is less about the end goal and more about just starting. Just starting. So here's the deal. In this particular story, Saul was still the king. The Philistines were oppressing Israel. And there were no weapons at all on the Israelite side because they'd been banned. No weapons, none. But the Philistines were threatening war. And they had marched out to battle, so Saul rallied up what he could, but we're told that many of his soldiers were so scared that they were in hiding. And it was bad, y'all. The Philistines were intent on ravaging the Israelites, but Saul had a son named Jonathan. King Saul's son Jonathan just could not abide by what he was seeing. The Philistine army was huge. They were well stocked with weapons and chariots and all the supplies they could need, and they were camped on one side of a valley, while what Saul could muster of an army for Israel was camped on the other side of the valley. Well, Israel was intimidated. They were in hiding. But Jonathan, he got a notion. Jonathan looked at his aide, his armor bearer. He said, "Let's go over to those uncircumcised and see if the Lord will work for us, for God is not restrained to save by many or by few." You look it up. That's what he said. God is not restrained to save by many or by few. Literally what he was saying was, let's go over there and pick a fight and see if God's in it. I mean, what kind of plan is that? If I was the armor bearer, I might have taken issue with that kind of military planning. I mean, really, what it boiled down to was, I have an idea. Let's see if it works. But his armor bearer was as much a hero as Jonathan was, and he responded, "You do all that is in your heart, and I will be there with you." So basically, these two guys, up against an army, not even sure yet if they fully understood what God was going to do in it, they just started. And that's the rub. They just started. And the story goes that teeth and hair were flying pretty soon after that as Jonathan and his armor bearer wiped out an entire garrison of Philistines. Just put a whooping on them. Two men. And it caught the attention of Saul, who could see and hear the fight across the way. And it galvanized the whole nation of Israel. And they came up out of hiding with a renewed sense of purpose. And they joined the fight. And they won. The victory was huge. But the outcome was originally very uncertain. The desire was great. The talent was strong, the need was there, but what would the outcome even be? Because on its face, what they were saying they had to do made no sense. It made no sense at all. The difference between Jonathan and his armor bearer and apparently everybody else in the entire nation of Israel was that he was the one who was bold enough to just start. Well, y'all, history is filled with greatness that follows from someone who wasn't great, but was willing to step out into the unknown and just start. It's the difference between being willing to step out assertively and take a risk as opposed to being stuck in a siege mentality. If you're in a siege mentality, you find yourself, you know, cowering down, barricading the gates, fretting over your resources to see how long they'll last. In a siege mentality, you find yourself preserving and protecting, but not really moving. In a siege mentality, you're maintaining the status quo. In a siege mentality, you're just trying to hold on to what you got and hope that some help finally eventually gets there. It's hard to start anything when you're hunkered down in a siege mentality. And when you start, you have to actually go. I mean, you can't just sit still and say you started. Jonathan could have taken two steps and stopped. It would have made sense. I mean, the garrison of the Philistines was huge. But he had to start, and he had to actually go all the way across the valley, up a cliff, into the midst of the enemy before he could really even know what the outcome would be. You look at history, you find the great moments. You will find someone or some group or usually some smaller number or scale than their opposition who finally stepped out of a siege mentality and did something that galvanized true change. They just started. I mean, I could name any number of moments in history that measure up the same way. Reagan said, "Tear down this wall," and soon after that, the fall of the Soviet Union occurred. Bill Gates, he decided to start a little company called Microsoft in his garage, and it became the world leader and has a $1 trillion impact. A little-known record company in Memphis, Tennessee called Sun Records changed the world of music because it took a chance one day on a young guy named Elvis Presley. Later on, went on to sign Charlie Rich, Roy Orbison, Jerry Lee Lewis, Johnny Cash. Look, in every one of those moments, somebody had to do something that nobody else was doing. They had to get out of their siege mentality. They had to start, and they had to actually go. Actually, across a valley to where the opposition was camped, sometimes not even knowing if it was going to work. They just had to start, and they had to go. It's like a saying I've heard about an old man who used to say in an old man wisdom sort of way, "Ah, Lord, a lot see, but few know. A lot start, but few go." Well, that, my friends, is what happened with the Panama Canal. Teddy Roosevelt had a notion. Congress and the press and the public, they all thought it was crazy. It had already been tried once and failed. It was a total failure. The French lost an estimated 22,000 men who died trying to dig the Panama Canal. Why try again? Why dig a canal 51 miles across the entire Isthmus of Panama? That's crazy. A water bridge to connect the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans big enough for ships to pass through? But Teddy Roosevelt said that he knew that if he gave the project over to the debates or the naysayers, that they would debate it for the next 50 years. So he decided he would rather dig the canal and let the naysayers debate him for the next 50 years. Yeah, so he dug the Panama Canal. It started with one shovel of dirt. It started. And it went on and on. And over 5,600 men died during the American construction of the canal. The U.S. government spent $375 million to build it. It made it the most expensive project in U.S. history up to that time. That would be the equivalent, by the way, of $15.2 billion in today's dollars. But they started, and they got it done. And today, there are entire realms of commerce that use and rely on the Panama Canal. The shipbuilding industry worldwide uses the size and the depth of the Panama Canal to determine the size of ships that are built all over the world. To this day, the world shipbuilding industry builds their ships in a standard that is known as Panamax. A Panamax ship can fit through the locks of the canal. And since 40% of all global maritime trade passes through the Panama Canal, it means that nearly every ship has to be built to Panamax standards. Yeah, that's 40% of world commerce shipborne passing through the canal, of which two-thirds of that goes to the United States or from the United States. Over $270 billion of cargo annually transits through the canal that was started by a crazy idea from an American president. And it has become the standard. It changed the world of commerce. It opened up trade. It removed barriers. And it all happened because Roosevelt was willing to just start. Look, somewhere along the way, somewhere in the midst of the siege, someone has to step out and see what happens, right? You might go across the way. You might get skinned up a mite. You might get in a ruckus, bring some scunion, who knows? But in the middle of starting and going, you might get neck deep and find out that God's actually in it. And the people who are around you might get roused up, and it can make all the difference. We don't have the luxury of being in a siege mentality. We don't. I mean, the liberal left right now wants our demise and the demise of our culture. It's going to take getting outside of the siege mentality. It's going to take starting. It's going to take going. It's going to take doing. I'm telling you, that's exactly why we have the Panama Canal. And as we talk about it here in a minute, do not lose sight of the fact that it all started with one idea and a president who was willing to just start, and it changed the entire world of commerce for the last over 100 years. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. Well, there you have it. Absolutely, man. I mean, I cannot even begin to describe to you how much the Panama Canal has changed the world. It has. And there's a lot of folks that have issues with it, and they want to talk about it, and who owns it, and who's got the rights to it. But I'm going to tell you right now, it is a strategic interest to the United States. And the fact that Trump's mean tweeting about it, that's a hoot. Y'all stay tuned. We'll talk about it in more detail. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, saving the world one soundbite at a time. Hey, by the way, I told you a moment ago that the Right Side Way monologue, as always, brought to you by attorney Stan McDonald. Let me tell you about him real quick. I know him personally. I think the world of him. Stan McDonald, he's a partner at the law firm of Wilmer & Lee. Man's been practicing law for 30 years in North Alabama. I mean, he's not only an advocate who will fight for your legal needs. I happen to know personally that Stan is the kind of guy who's been an absolute warrior for the kind of causes that are near and dear to the Right Side Ruffian community. So there's that. But look, attorney Stan McDonald, he has represented his clients in literally thousands of real estate transactions. He can represent you in every level of court, whether it be local, state, or federal. And when Stan McDonald's on your side, I always say you will have no greater friend, and likewise, your adversaries will have no greater foe. So yeah, attorney Stan McDonald at the law firm of Wilmer & Lee. Here's how you get in touch with him. You ready? Stan McDonald, phone number 256-479-3020. That's Stan McDonald at the law firm of Wilmer & Lee, 256-479-3020. And do me a favor, tell him you heard about it on Right Side Radio. Oh, yeah, I got to do the thing here right there. That silly thing. You ready? Nervous intention made the quality legal service be performed as great the quality legal service for other lawyers. Bam.
It's a good one today.
That may have been a record. I'm not sure. It just felt like a record. I'm going to call it. It was a record. Hey, I got a phone call real quick. And before I run out of time because I ran long in the monologue, let me jump on it. Brian from Huntsville. Hey, buddy. How are you?
Doing well, and it's good to hear you folks today, and especially about the Panama Canal, because Teddy and the group did something the French did not do. They recognized the source of yellow fever, which was the mosquitoes.
Yep.
They drained swamp areas close to the building areas. They put in nets on the people's tents and housing and everything they had out there. And I'm sorry about this, PETA, but yes, they poisoned mosquitoes.
if PETA cares about mosquitoes, then I don't know what's going on. But yeah, you're right.
Might be a side dish for some of them. Oh, I don't know.
No kidding. But yeah,
in any case, that was it. I found the source of the problem, fixed it, costing us a lot of money, but in the long run, it got the job done.
Yep, absolutely, it did. American ingenuity came in a variety of ways. See you, Brian. Thank you very much. So malaria was one of the chief sources of fatalities in the building of the canal. And you're talking, what did I say, I think it's 34,000, some say 38,000 people died, but the majority of those were during the French effort. 5,700 are recorded dead from the building by the Americans. That's still a lot. I mean, think about it, 5,700. And it was dangerous work. I mean, they were, you know, falling rocks and, you know, and debris piles and, you know, rough terrain and, you know, sweltering heat. And just it was not light duty whatsoever. But they got it done. And think about the cost. If that was done in today's world, they estimate that the cost that was spent then of $375 million would be roughly $15.2 billion. But I can guarantee you, some lawyers and engineers and bureaucrats will get involved, make it even more expensive than that. Oh, anyway, it needs to be preserved. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here, y'all, it's Alabama. And I mean to say, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. Which, by the way, is got a little change coming up after the first of the year. So next week, two things. One is, if you are a 101.1 listener out of Birmingham on live radio, just know this. We went through contract renegotiation with them, decided that the best bet for us was to go ahead and part ways with them. And so we are coming off of 101.1 in Birmingham effective next week. However, a week after that, we go live in Chattanooga. So just know this, we're still going to be very much live every single day. You can get us on our multiple live radio affiliate stations, but also anybody can watch us live online. And right now, the weather is playing havoc with our internet, but nonetheless, we are streaming live. I'm watching me. Go to rightsidemedia.org. That's our website. Go to YouTube. We are streaming live audio and video every day. It's a hoot too, man. Just you can see when we have folks in the studio like we'll have in about an hour, the ladies here from Saving Title IX, you'll be able to see everybody in studio, and I encourage you, check it out on YouTube. And if you go to YouTube and you go to Right Side Media, that's the company, not Right Side Radio, look for Right Side Media. And when you get there, if you haven't already done it, click subscribe, because that helps us grow as a company. Live broadcast every day. Straight. That's how my wife listens to it is right now. Just pulls it up on her phone every day and listens to it. So, that's changing. Chattanooga coming, rolling off in Birmingham. We'll have more announcements in the near future. Just stand by for it. All right, listen, we're going to jump on this topic. I got a couple of text messages. Let me grab those real quick. Ken from Rimlap sends me a headline off a story. He says, Sacramento, California, effort to crack down on the invasive influence of American culture. The state of California announced that it will okay, it's a Babylon Bee. Yeah, I get you. John C. from Madison says, didn't China take control of the canal after we gave it back to Panama? Yes and no. There's what I would call a great deal of Chinese influence. So there are operations at the canal area, the canal zone, that China does operate. China also is operating multiple ports that service the canal. And then at the same time, there's like, by some records, up to 130,000 Chinese nationals that have moved to Panama for the sole purpose of being there for influence. It's part of their Belt and Road Initiative, and I'll get back to that here in a little while. But yes, China is very influential in Panama, and that is a part of what really has got President Trump stirred up. Are they in control of it? Not technically. There's a thing called the Panama Canal Authority, the PCA, and the Panama Canal Authority is a quasi-governmental entity that is supposed to be the one in charge. It's gotten onerous. But let's talk about several things. So first of all, So Trump sends out a tweet, and he says, he starts off with Panama. He says, Merry Christmas to all, including the wonderful soldiers of China who are lovingly but illegally operating the Panama Canal. And then he goes on to say, you know, that 38,000 people died, he said, during the waterway's construction, and that the U.S. put billions of dollars in repair money into it annually, and we have absolutely nothing to say about it. And then, so basically what he was doing was throwing down the gauntlet on, hey, you know, Panama, just so you know, we feel like we have a pretty vested interest here. And so I'm reading an article from Rolling Stone. Phil, did you go to Rolling Stone? I did. Libs are freaking out, man. You can watch it on CNN. They're like, Trump's territorial. He's trying to go out and annex territories. He's not. It's not going to happen. We're not going to try and go down there and seize Panama. We're not going to go annex Canada or Greenland for that matter. But he did. So his tweet, which has gotten so much attention, expanded from there. It went from Panama, hey, Panama, and all you Chinese down there in Panama, Panama Canal. Then he said, he keeps calling Trudeau the governor of Canada. Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. Calling Trudeau the governor of Canada, floating the idea of Canada becoming our 51st state, promising that the taxes would be cut by more than 60%. If they did, they'd be militarily protected like nobody else in the world. So people are like sitting up going, what is Trump doing? Is he going to try and take over Canada? No. And then he goes to Greenland. Now, Greenland's interesting. Greenland is actually a territory of Denmark, which a lot of people don't realize. But the prime minister says Greenland is ours. We will not be for sale. But Trump did float the idea of coming into Greenland. And he says, we need that territory for our own buffer protection. And oh, by the way, we provide national security to you. So, hey, so what's going on with all this? What is this? I mean, why is he doing this? So first of all, for the libs whose heads are exploding, how dare he? He's putting things on an uneven keel. He's threatening to take over a foreign nation. No, he's not. Please. No one believes that we're going to launch a military operation to go seize Canada. No one believes we're going to just, like, you know, dive on in feet first to basically do a hostile takeover of Greenland. Now, here's some things. Canada immediately began making some changes on their border when Trump started poking. And that's what he does. The art of the deal, right? Trump looks for the weakness. He looks for the things that are telling, if you will. He looks for the things that make people squirm, and he pokes at them. And it gives him a leg up in discussions. It's something that he can back off of and try to laugh with, but it also makes them uncomfortable. And so they're on their heels in the conversations. So Trump has already told Canada, you need to stop with the whole, you know, letting everything across your northern border. It's our sovereignty that's being affected, so stop it now. And oh, by the way, I'll put tariffs on you if you don't. By the way, how would you like to be the 51st state? And all it does is seed the conversation and keep us basically living rent-free in their heads. And that's what he's doing. He's living rent-free in Justin Trudeau's head right now. The same is true of Greenland. We're not going to go send the 82nd Airborne in to parachute in and seize Greenland. Now, I will say this. If Denmark came back and said, yeah, you want to buy it? I guarantee you there'd be a discussion. That'd be massive. That'd be huge. But doubtful. Here's what I do believe could happen. The first thing that happened when Trump did this is it just by coincidence, I suppose, the Danish government announced a huge boost in their defense spending right after he did that for Greenland. Oh, really? Yes. Do not be a bit surprised also to find that somewhere in the next year or two, a negotiated opportunity for forward basing in Greenland by U.S. military is available. Why? Look at the map. It gives us access to the polar regions. It gives us quicker access or a way station, if you would, en route to Europe. It's a North Atlantic stronghold. It's got massive territory. It's got great training sites. So do you need naval, air, or for that matter, even land operations? Maybe it would be a forward basing, a staging area, a presence projection, if you will. Could be. And then there's Panama. And this is the one that is the most serious. I mean, let's not forget, we've already invaded Panama once. We did. Remember that? Manuel Noriega. Manuel Noriega thought he could rattle and bang his sword on a podium and threaten U.S. interests and threaten the U.S. Interests in the Canal Zone, for that matter. And next thing you know, he had a Ranger Regiment and the 82nd Airborne, and he had you know, the 160th Special Operations Aviation Regiment and Delta coming into his back door. I mean, he basically had the weight of the U.S. military suddenly canvassed upon him in Operation Just Cause. And we hauled Manuel Noriega out of his bed in his pajamas and took him back to the United States and put him in prison and then restored the Panama Canal's, you know, ability to operate. So would we do it again? Well, I think what Trump is doing here is saying, we are not going to stand idly by and watch a hostile nation, China, gain its Belt and Road influence to the extent that they can then dictate to us whether our shipping comes and goes. We are not going to sit idly by and let Panama charge U.S. ships massive amounts of money just to negotiate passage through a canal that we built and that we just turned over to them in the last 30 years. Oh, 20 years. 20, was it 25 years? 1999? What am I looking at here? Yeah. Wow. 25 years. So Jimmy Carter gave it away, and I'll talk more about that in a minute. But the truth of the matter is, we built it. In fact, if you really want to get down to it, and what some would consider to be a dicey amount of foreign policy, Panama became a sovereign nation because of the United States. We wanted to build a canal. We couldn't get agreement with, you know, their predecessor. We managed to get Panamanian influence built up to the point that they could then separate and become the nation of Panama as we know them today. And now they have a controlling site that the world requires to maintain its operability. Are we going to sit idly by and let that be taken away? Frankly, no. You know what it would do to the United States economy? Let's think about this. If 40% of the world's maritime commerce goes through the Panama Canal, and of that, two-thirds is the United States coming and going, what does that mean to our economy if it shuts down? You're not going to just blithely sail down around, you know, the horn and come up around South America. You know what that does to a trip cost-wise? You know what it does to a trip in terms of risk? It's just not a good solution. The Panama Canal changed the lay of the land, or the water for that matter. This is of a vital national interest. So do I think that Trump would send the 82nd Airborne back again to take it? Not tomorrow. Do I think that if China tried to bow up and say, we shall take control of this, it is now ours, I'm pretty sure that the 18th Airborne Corps would be down there. You would have a massive, massive situation of vital national interest in our backyard, in our hemisphere, in our very backyard. So do I think that we're going down there? Not anytime soon. But do I think it's possible? If it's threatened, I do, because it is absolutely a massive piece of our economic engine. It is a part of what makes us successful. Our imports and exports rely on it. And the idea that we're going to divert everything to California ports or to East Coast ports and still make our economy function the way it has been, no. The world relies on it. The United States relies on it. It's a big, big deal. We'll take a break right now. I'll come right back, and I'll try to give you some more about why it's a big deal and just opine for a little while about what is Trump up to? What's he leveraging here? Who's he really talking to when he makes these threats about Panama? You'll see. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Making common sense like a superpower. Got a text from Robert from Athens. He says, "Dear Colonel Phil, back in 1991, when Quebec was voting to separate from English-speaking Canada, a minority in Alberta threatened to separate and join the United States." Wow. I've not heard that. He said, "From conversations I've had online, there are still some Albertans who have not given up that idea."
Well, who's
Shark, that's awesome.
Who's the Shark Tank guy, the Canadian?
He was all over it. I saw that.
O'Leary is his last
O'Leary,
name.
O'Leary, yeah.
He said that he's going down to Mar-a-Lago to talk Trump into doing it. He claimed he's being dead serious. He said that he thinks over 50% of Canadians. So,
you know what's crazy? And so, if you've been to Detroit, the bridge is right there. I mean, the port of entry into Canada, and it's always lines, you know, waiting to come and go. But I have heard too that a lot of Canadians, because they're so sick of their own, you know, socialized healthcare, they have Blue Cross cards and they come get their medicine in the United States.
But yet we hear so many liberals in America claiming how Canada's a better place to live.
Yeah,
you know?
No doubt. That would be a hoot. Mike from Coxie texted in. He said, "I got a chance to visit Fort Clayton down in Panama back in the early 90s. It was an absolutely beautiful place. I know I did not get bit by a mosquito." So, I was down there myself in 99 when we were closing out. In fact, I went down there as a group with the 20th Special Forces Group, and we were setting up what was known as a jump talk. I think I said this yesterday. Basically, 7th Special Forces Group was relocating its headquarters out of Panama and over to Florida, and so we had to set up a jump talk for them so that we kept a command element open while they were en route. But it was beautiful. I spent several weeks down there, and the interesting thing is there were multiple posts along the Canal Zone area, Fort Clayton being one, which is one of the major ones. But there was another one called Corozal, I think they had a Corozal West and Corozal, and my grandfather was a post commander at Corozal, like in the 50s, I believe. So it's been a major hub for military activity. We used to have the U.S. school down there out of Panama. Just very cool. Bruce Shen says the problem with the canal is the second worst president gave it away. Yeah, absolutely. So about that, So Trump, a piece here on Town Hall, talks about the fact that Trump is making these announcements. And then, by the way, as soon as he made the announcement about, oh, by the way, Panama, you put you on notice, your Chinese influences, yada, yada. He announced also he appointed a guy named Kevin Marino Cabrera to serve as the U.S. ambassador to the Republic of Panama. And this is the guy who he says has very much been a part of his campaign, very influential in terms of international trade and been a Miami-Dade County Commissioner. So we have a new MAGA-oriented ambassador to Panama. But the Panamanians are saying, hey, slow your roll there, buddy. So Panama's leader shot back. CBS has an article on this. Panama's leader shot back in a recent statement saying the waterway is not for sale. Since then, Trump has posted repeatedly about the canal. And the article goes on to talk about, you know, when Teddy Roosevelt built it. But then it points out that there were people, even in Panama, who were irritated that the United States had gained treaty rights to run the canal. And we did. We preserved it. We guarded it. We built it. And then we ran it for the better part of a century. And the Panamanians who still even questioned the validity of it. Was it heavy-handed? Probably. Could they have done it on their own? No. Did anybody else have the wherewithal to run that thing? And then Jimmy Carter came along. Oh, boy. Jimmy Carter, 1977. He decided he would go back to negotiations with the nation of Panama because, you know, that just made good sense. Listen, when I was down there, so Carter signed the papers in 1977 giving the Panama Canal Zone back to the Panamanians. When he did that, he didn't just do it. We literally had to go in there, and the United States spent a huge amount of money plussing up every building, paving every parking lot, and I'm not kidding when I say changing every light bulb. We had to make sure there was not a single cracked window in a building that we left behind. Before we even left, they were already raiding the buildings. It's just ridiculous. I mean, who does that? Here, we're going to build it back better and then leave it. But we have seen an amazing amount of U.S. effort into that canal, and it depends on it. When we come back, I'll tell you about something most recent. I guess the Panamanians were kind of taking advantage of people needing use of the canal, auctioning off slots to pass them. Come on, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international, and oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome back to hour number two on a Friday afternoon. Text lines are open. You want to text it or call it, you can do both with the same number, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. I look forward to seeing, too, by the way, what happens when the text lines reach Chattanooga. How's it going to go?
Yeah, I hope we got some avid texters in Chattanooga.
I know it, man.
To get involved.
What's the area code in Chattanooga? Do you know?
I actually don't even know. I'd have to look that up.
Look that up. So we'll start seeing them streaming into our text lines. But yeah, text it or call it 833-68-RIGHT. That's the number.
It's a 423.
It's a 423 area code. That's right. I think it's the same. No, it wouldn't be the same for Knoxville. It couldn't be. But anyway, yep. Okay. Look forward to it.
I look forward to them watching on the stream as well.
You know what else is cool is that station that we're going to be on out of Chattanooga also covers a big swath of northwest Georgia and parts of northeast Alabama that we don't already reach. So, yeah.
That's a pretty cool lineup we're on, too, of Bongino and I think Shapiro will still be on there, or maybe not. But anyways, good lineup we're joining up there in Chattanooga.
Good lineup. Looking forward to it. All right, back on the Panama Canal. So here's something else for you to think about. It's not just what the Panama Canal does to our economy if we lose control of it, if we have no access to it, for that matter. But the Panama Canal is also considered, like, actually crucial to our ability to do force projection with our U.S. Navy. The Navy treats the Panama Canal regularly. And the U.S. Navy, I mean, so first of all, we're the number one user of the canal, number one in the world. That's us. We built it. We ran it for almost a century, and we're the number one user of it still to this day. But the U.S. Navy trends back and forth to get our ships from the Atlantic to the Pacific and back and forth. Jimmy Carter gave it away for a dollar. A dollar. Like, what? Why was this okay? And by the way, it was never given away with the intent that, oh, by the way, once you get the Panama Canal, you get to start charging us for the usage of it. And so suddenly we find ourselves, the U.S., our Navy, our corporations are now being charged exorbitant prices just to go passage through the straits. And it's often considered to be unfair. And I've got an article here. I mean, that was from Town Hall. And now I've got an article right here from a Maritime Executive magazine. Maritime Executive magazine, so this came out in November of last year, November 2023. Now, remember, we had supply chain disruptions. Things were happening. They were also going through a drought for a period of time, and it was impacting the ability of the Panamanians to see water levels at the usual rates up and through the canal. But they began taking advantage of it. They began auctioning off the rights. They had somewhere in the neighborhood of 109 ships backlogged at one point trying to get through the canal. You can only get a certain amount through per day. They began to cut the number of slots down to, it was getting down to 25 ships a day could go through. Then they got it down to 18 by February of this year. And then they began auctioning off, and believe it or not, one company actually paid $4 million to be given immediate access to passage through the canal. So suddenly they've got not just a cash cow that people have to have. Now they got, hey, we got a bidding war. Well, how much do you want to pay? 2.5? Buddy over here is paying 2.75. 2.75, do I hear three? Do I hear three? And it went up $4 million to get through. Now, that's unconscionable. That's basically the world transit being held hostage. Suddenly we went from having a canal that we built and maintain, and I understand there's operational costs, but we built it. We had people that died building it. We helped Panama's, you know, become a sovereign nation to build it. And then at the same time, we're now paying millions of dollars for our ships to get through it. And it's exorbitant. I mean, typical auction prices were usually below $1 million. That one went for $4 million. They had some going for 2.6. They had some going for 2.85. Meanwhile, you look at it and go, so China is there? Yeah, China's there. So if you haven't heard of China's Belt and Road Initiative, China's Belt and Road is their version of buying influence around the world. It's just the name they give to it. The Belt and Road Initiative is their way of saying, hey, how do you feel about, their small nation with not many resources? If we come in and look, we'll put in a port. Hey, how would you like for us to put in some rail infrastructure? Would you like for somebody to build that tunnel for you? We can do that. It'll cost. You know, we're going to need a little influence, if you know what I'm saying. Next thing you know, they've crept in and they've been, you know, everybody's beholden to them. Well, Panama's no different. June 2016, Panama inaugurated an expansion of the canal. See, they did. They put like a $5.25 billion in it through the Panama Canal Authority to expand the canal's opportunity or capabilities. 1 year later, June of 2017, the Panamanian government decided to establish diplomatic relations with China. Okay. Suddenly you have a new flow of Chinese investments into the canal zone. A lot. So the People's Republic of China made all kinds of efforts around the world, and China being, you know, what it is, it's an Asian giant. They want influence in Panama. Well, they got it. So they are now the second largest user of the canal zone after the United States. They are the largest provider of commerce on the Caribbean coast of Panama. They have roughly 135,000 Chinese nationals now living in Panama. Why would that be? They also announced the construction of a new container port near Colon, which will have facilities for receiving liquefied natural gas. They also plan construction to go exceed $900 million. The construction also is going to result in the first container terminal designed to handle the new Panamax ships that are going back and forth. And then on top of that, they've expressed interest in, you know, helping build some railway infrastructure connecting the capital of Panama and the province of Chiriquí, which is like 400 kilometers long. And then, oh, by the way, hey, you know, hey, it looks like Panama's got the most important air hub in Latin America now because they have a direct flight back and forth to China. Really? Yep, twice a week. So suddenly you have massive Chinese influence, and people wonder why Trump is sending out mean tweets. I'm just telling you. If China's influence continues to cost American shipping, which includes the American Navy, the ability for right of passage from the Pacific to the Atlantic and back and forth, then don't think for a second that we're going to sit idly by and just let that be. Not for a second.
Well, I mean, since I'm sitting with a lawyer here, I've seen some people argue that Panama's not living up to their end of the deal in the first place because they were supposed to be neutral. Yeah. Could there be an argument made that the treaty is no longer valid because Panama did not uphold their end of the deal? Obviously, even if that were to be argued, it would be hard to be enforced. But still, do you think there's any right, like any sort of grounds for that argument to be made?
There's absolutely grounds for it. And I think what you'll wind up having, this is where you get into, you can go to, you can go legal or you can go diplomatic. And the diplomatic route is going to, that's a great question, by the way. And so the diplomatic route is going to weigh heavy on that. They're going to bring that up, and they're going to claim, you know, international legal rights that are being denied, and they're going to, or being suppressed, or putting a chilling effect upon, you know, commerce. And then they're also going to talk about what it does to national security. And when you start leaning on foreign nations and say, what you're doing is hurting our national security, it's like a wink, wink, nod, nod. Things could get ugly for you if you don't back off. I really think you're going to see less of a legal fight, more of a diplomatic fight. But that being said, you leave it all on the table. You know, it's like I've talked about multiple times. That's what I don't think that the Biden administration understands. You don't go in with one of the pieces of force projection. You go with all of them. And that's where that DIME acronym comes in, we've talked about before. DIME stands for diplomacy, information or intelligence, military and economic. You bring all of it. And that's why Trump says, I'll put tariffs on you. Don't make me come down there, you. And oh, by the way, you, you're going to talk to my new ambassador who's very MAGA-oriented. In other words, we're going to be America first.
But that's too mean. We don't want to be mean to people.
It is mean. It's harsh.
Yeah.
I don't understand how people can elect a man like that who's going to put America first. I don't understand it at all. But yeah, you're right, though. There was a determined effort towards Panamanian neutrality. And that's one of the reasons why we're calling out the whole China influence thing. China's neutral when it comes to us. China has an inferiority complex. China wants to be where we are. China can't quite get there because socialism will never be able to outpace capitalism. At the same time, though, China's willing to do by hook and by crook what it takes to get the Belt and Road Initiative into place so that the countries that they're in will now be beholden to them. And the only way to, by the way, sometimes that comes with actual debt. China holds a lot of debt for a lot of nations, and they know it. And those nations don't want them to call that marker. Well, if you build them a railway, Panama, if you build them a new port, Panama, if you become one of their economic resources they have to have, Panama, the next thing you know, Panama's not willing to make China mad. So Trump is pointing out that, okay, you don't want to make China mad? Guess what? You just made us mad.
Mm-hmm.
And we're bigger than they are, and you're in our backyard.
It seems like we got a lot of ground to work with there.
And I do think it's still in Panamanian minds that when it really got ugly, we did send the 82nd Airborne. I don't think that'll happen here. I really don't. But I don't think that we should ever underestimate what a vital national interest this canal zone is.
Oh, like I can't even fathom the amount of money America's lost from that deal that Carter made. I mean, I don't think anybody could put a number on that.
Oh, everybody looked at it and went, we're doing what?
Mm-hmm. For a dollar?
For a dollar. And you get how much how much money we put into it to get it ready for you to take it for a dollar and then charge us for the use of the canal that we built? That's awesome. You said you had a quote on YouTube or a comment on YouTube or something.
Somebody commented on the Rumble. The first one is from, this girl is BarbMCM99. First, they said, if the USA built it, then why give it away? But then the second comment said, Alberta would love to become the 51st state. So I don't know. I don't know if this person
We're
lives
going
in
back
Alberta.
To Canada again.
Yeah. So those are two comments on Rumble.
So if we built it, why give it away? Great question. Go ask Jimmy Carter if he can remember why. But there was I think I said earlier in the show, there was a long-standing dispute by people who believed that the heavy hand of the United States had forced the issue back 100 years ago. And they were disputing the ability of the United States to run something that is inside their sovereign territory. But yet we built it. I mean, you can go ask Cuba right now, why do we have Guantanamo Bay? Cuba's not our friend.
Mm-hmm.
You know why? Because in a period of great influence, we said, you know what? We like Guantanamo Bay. We think we'll use that for a while. Here's a legal document you're going to sign. And we have it to this day. We have Gitmo. Well, the Panama Canal Zone was no different, except that this was not taken like in the Spanish-American War, we got Guantanamo Bay. This was not taken this way. This was, hey, we'll help you guys. Let us build it. But we run it. And they're like, okay. It was still an economic driver for their economy. And now here we are for the use of it.
It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Brian from Huntsville just texted in. He says, actually, he texted it twice. He says, Panama statement, psst, here, kid, you want some free candy? Yeah, no kidding. If you like it next time, it'll cost you. Ugh. Then he says, simple, every U.S. ship dump out a few tons of cement from hidden cargo holds. I don't think we want to do that. All right, listen, we're going to take a break right now. We'll come back from this break. We will jump on in and wrap this topic up. And then coming up at 3:30, the ladies of Saving Title IX are going to be in studio with us. Y'all, I'm telling you, Saving Title IX, this is one of the cultural fights of our lifetime. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain. Why did I freeze up?
Get that flip-flop out of your mouth.
I'm saying, man. Over here eating bananas or something. I don't know what's going on. Yeah. All right. We're back. Let me wrap this thing up. Do I think that we're going to invade Panama? No, unless China in some way inhibits our ability for fair transit back and forth. Will we keep paying a fee? Probably. Though we want to pay it commensurate with what other nations are paying. Are we going to allow ourselves to be seconded to people who can outbid us? Like if a Japanese cargo ship comes through and it says, hey, we'll pay $4 million. And next thing you know, it puts an American ship who's been waiting for passage in the backlog. No, that's not going to happen. I think you're going to wind up seeing some diplomatic stepping up to sort of rectify the situation. And what we don't want to see is China in the background going, hey, Panama Canal Authority, you know about that port we built you? Yeah. Can you make sure the Chinese ships get first passage? That'd be great. Thanks. That can't happen. If that begins to happen, it's got to be a queue of ships going through in the order in which they were received. And if there is a precedence, it needs to be established in advance and not something established on the fly. We cannot allow China's to become something that inhibits our A, economic base, or B, our military power projection. Can't do it. So keep your eyes on Panama. Now, do I think we're going to annex Greenland and Canada? Doubtful. I don't think so. I believe that there's more to come for the story. And I do believe that you're watching the art of the deal. You're watching Trump put people on their heels and making them think twice because they realize that that they got a president here who will call things out and who will set a tone for the conversation himself and not let it be set by others.
By the way, we just got a text in from somebody from Panama.
Dean from Panama. He's saying, I was born there in 70, left with my dad. He hated Carter. It was his home, and he hated leaving. Could have, only if it was in American territory. Yeah, man, I'm saying. Dean, hey, thanks for checking in and stay with us. Brian from Huntsville again says, have the USS Missouri drop anchor halfway through the locks. Brian has like got his game face on.
He's ready to go.
All right, hey, I gotta. The music's gonna play like any second now. But I gotta address something. Was that a stocking stuffer that you brought with you?
Yeah, it is. This Donald Trump pen for people watching on stream.
It's not speaks.
I will be the greatest president.
It's great, isn't it? It's got like 10 of them, and one just says, "I'm really rich." Great president. Thanks, Mom.
That's awesome. All right, coming up next, we're going to jump into Dipper number two, Saving Title IX. I got three ladies going to be in studio with us. It could get out of hand real fast. But listen, Saving Title IX, that to me is one of the civil rights issues of our decade. Let's don't let it slide by. There's more work to do, even though Biden appears to have finally backed off at the last second. Well, I mean, why not? He's leaving office. We'll fix it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one, y'all, Alabama. I mean, Alabama, y'all. And I mean to say this show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. Which, by the way, is expanding. Just so you know, coming up here in a couple weeks, we go live in Chattanooga. So looking forward to adding WGOW out of Chattanooga to the Right Side Radio family. All right, listen, I got a studio full of people. And I just told JP, I said, this could get out of hand like real quick. No, your microphones are off, so just hang on. I can already tell. Look at them reaching for their mics. No, I am real glad to have some folks in here. Now, some of these people are people y'all already know, and one of them is a voice you've heard before but have not met. Let me just do some roll call in here. So sitting in studio with us, from my left to the right, Emily Jones, who is the host of the podcast on Right Side Media, The Controversial Mom. She's also the founder of Moms for Liberty in Madison. Emily, how you doing?
I'm lovely.
How are you? You're good. Don't get too far away from that mic. There you go.
Yeah, see, my voice doesn't carry.
I'll skip the one in the middle because she's new to the crowd and go to the far right, and that would be often referred to as Lee from Huntsville. Lee from Huntsville, host of the show several times, comes in every week, does Butters and Lee segment, and I call you Lee from Huntsville. That's how I first met you, but everybody knows you as Laura Lee.
Yes.
All right. And then sitting in the middle, the person who is joining us for the first time in studio but has called in multiple times. Glad to have you here. We'll just call you D. Hey, D.
Hello. Good gracious. That was really close to my mouth.
This is gonna
hello.
Be so, we're
happy
gonna
to
get,
be here.
We're going to get so out of control, I can already tell.
That's now, my favorite speed.
That's a good speed.
Yeah.
And D, for the benefit of the audience, you've known Laura Lee for a long time.
Yes, and since we were in high school, so last week.
So if you got stories, we might need them later, all right?
Absolutely. I blackmail pictures.
You've got my email address, just please.
I got it all, yeah.
Although I did learn last week that you both got tattoos.
Yes. Her idea.
Wait a minute.
It was your. You said, let's get tattoos, and we pulled over on the side of the road and went to the Brandon Iron Tattoo Parlor.
I recall that being a joint decision.
I just agreed. You were a bad influence.
Oh, whatever.
I was brand new out of gymnastics, and I was allowed to do something that was be considered rebellious, and that was my big rebellion.
Well, speaking of gymnastics, so you were on the University of Alabama's women's gymnastics team.
Yes.
For how many years? 3 years? Four
Roll
years?
Roll Tide.
Yeah. Okay.
I was there Roll Tide.
You were there War Eagle. Roll Tide. That's great.
Yeah, four. Yeah, 4 years. Yes.
Great. And that was in what years?
Well, Phil, my goodness. It's very rude to ask a woman her age.
So how old are you?
I'm ageless. Okay. Thank you.
But you were a D1 athlete, which is always cool. And right here in the state of Alabama.
Very blessed. The Lord blessed me. He blessed me from the beginning, but I started gymnastics when I was 4 and competed until I was 21. Yeah. So it was great.
Yeah. Well, I shook your hand a minute ago, and I'm pretty sure you can crush rocks with that hand.
So. My hands and my feet have both saved my life several times.
Well, listen, that brings up where we're headed with this conversation, because Title IX, which has been a gerrymandered situation with the Biden administration, Title IX put in place for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is to preserve and protect the rights of women in the realm of education and in one part, sports. So that being said, you guys, I'm sitting here with three ladies who decided, and you know, I talk on the show all the time, and I encourage folks, get busy. Find that thing you're passionate about and go get started. In fact, my monologue earlier today was on the idea of get started. That's how the Panama Canal got built. Somebody's had to get started. You guys have started an organization, and it's just for, you know, and by the way, I've got some paperwork here for you. But Saving Title IX is the name of an organization you guys just formed, the three of you, as the incorporators for a new 501c3. And the name kind of says it all. What's kind of cool, though, is you can call it STIX because it's ST Roman numeral 9, STIX, STIX. Not a 70s rock band.
Which was amazing, though. We like that band.
I actually was a huge fan. So. But you guys are looking at Saving Title IX. Now, okay, let me ask you this. Biden came out, or the Biden administration, I don't think Biden knew anything about what was coming out last week. Biden's on vacation at St. Croix again, by the way, because he needed one more vacation before he left office.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But the Biden administration pulled back on this awful, awful rule that would have allowed transgender participation in women's sports and all of it. Are we done yet?
That would have required it.
It would have required it.
It's still
it.
Happening it every day.
We're just getting started with the fight.
Right.
A hang pullback, a doesn't change anything. No. We're still going to fight this battle. You got blue states that are going to full steam ahead. They're not going to stop.
So you guys have a brand spanking new 501c3 that has work it wants to do, but the Biden administration didn't just cut the legs out from under you. You still got work to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, I mean, from the athletic perspective, I mean, you know, I remember the day we decided to start Sticks, and it was, you know, we were all on the phone together, and I don't know if it's the Lord or just me brain dumping, probably a little bit of both, but I said, if I had to compete against men, and my two best events in gymnastics were vault and floor exercise, which are the power events. There's running, there's jumping, there's tumbling. It's, you know, it's power. Those are power events. If I had to compete against men in those events, my career very easily could have been erased. Yeah. Like completely erased. No NCAA champion, no SEC champion, no SEC female athlete of the year, no 17-time All-American, no first black gym. Like a lot, everything could have been erased, completely erased if I had to compete against males. And we just got to talking about it, and I said, what are we doing? Like, y'all know everything about sort of the Board of Education piece of this. I'm a walking testimony about what would have happened from the athletic side and what is happening from the athletic side. We just watched the IOC sanction male-on-female physical abuse in the Olympic Games this year, and had two men duking it out for the women's gold medal in boxing. And one of those men was just votes for AP Female Athlete of the Year. So to say that our battle is just beginning is an understatement. And we've got some serious work to do. And I think that not the least of which will be making a lot of institutions very comfortable with what we have to say about it and what they are willing to sort of turn a blind eye to or just sort of be very about and not say anything about. That's not how we're going to move. That's not what's going to happen.
You guys had Riley Gaines come speak. I'm looking at Emily. I'm pointing. No one can see on the radio. But you guys had Riley Gaines come speak at the dinner you had for Moms for Liberty early this year. And, you know, you've got D here on your squad who has the experience of being a D1 athlete, but Riley actually had to compete against men and deal with it. And there's, you know, getting an Ivy League at Penn? Yeah.
Kentucky.
She was in Kentucky.
She was in Kentucky. That's right. She had to swim against him at Penn. That's right. That's what it was. So she got the whole schmeal because she had to compete against the guy. And if I'm not mistaken, she actually did beat him in one event. But She talks at length about what it means to women's sports in general. What was it like having her here, by the way?
It was great. I mean, Riley's it's hard for me to remember that she's like 22. Like, she's a kid. And when she tried to offer a total stranger her cell phone number to communicate with in the future, it reminded me that she's 22 and does not understand the world she is now living in. But no, I mean, she's just amazing because at 22, she's fighting a battle that none of us even thought about when we were that young. And she does it very unapologetically and unafraid. And
very poised.
She's really something for young women to look up to, of standing up and fighting, getting involved, like you always say.
Yeah.
And she's married. That makes a big difference.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think it does. I mean, her husband fully 100% supports, but he was an athlete himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at Kentucky.
And what's interesting too, he's actually from Great Britain, so he brings an international flavor to this. And Great Britain may have bigger problems than we do in some of these ways.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so what I'm looking, I keep all right for the benefit of the audience, I got three people in front of me that I'm dialoguing with. But what is Sticks going to do? What are y'all looking at? And I'm looking at Lee when I say that.
Well, we're going to do a lot, but we're mainly going to be speaking to different groups, government groups, state groups, about the effect of having biological males in women's sports, and the negative effects of how to affect sports, how it affects, just because the Title IX rules didn't go into effect doesn't mean that some states aren't already putting that into effect.
Yeah.
They're just not required to do so.
Yeah.
And so I'm just saying, I think that it's going to help to guide them. It's going to help energize the groups there at the state level. I mean, because look at California. I mean, it's just full of this kind of nonsense. And I think that we can energize the groups that are already there and already wanting to fight. That's what I would do.
Yeah. What would this have done to... And you know what it's like to be on a squad or a team and how important it is. I mean, and I'm sure a lot of times the floor routines and all that were an individual doing their part, but it was still a team.
Yeah.
And the cohesiveness and the ability to work together. What do you imagine this does to the ability of a team to be a team when they have this thrust into their midst?
Oh, I mean, it's a, I'm going to say this, it's a turd in a punch bowl.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't have that level of disruption. I mean, Riley talks at length about what it was like the very first time they were all in the locker room with him.
Yeah.
And how really just unabashed he was in his arrogance about being in that space with them. And I can tell you right now, if that had been going on when I was competing, I would not have had the opportunity to compete because my parents would have snatched me out so fast.
Yeah.
My head would have spun. Like, there's no way, there's no scenario where my mom and dad, brothers, sister, like neighbors, kindergarten teacher, like nobody's letting that happen.
Yeah.
No one's allowing me to be in that space where, you know, a girl's area, a girl's space is being invaded, and it is an invasion. And it's not just about the legality of it, right? Which is, you know, Title IX is a law, but it's also about the social contagion and it's about the cultural contagion, right? There's a lot of buy-in culturally about this. And so that's one of the biggest things I think we're going to be pushing back about is the cultural buy-in.
Yeah.
You know, the legal is the legal, and the, you know, we say that we are, you know, what we prioritize is legislation and education and activation. And, but we are, you know, there's the legislation side and then there's the other, the practicality of it all, right? And then, and the other thing that people are not talking about is the fact that there's a lot of athletes and just girls in general in, you know, locker rooms and bathrooms who have had very negative experiences with males.
Yep.
And so the trauma that this can trigger,
yep,
just by virtue of a man being in that space alone, this could have a really catastrophic effect on girls in general. Just seeing a male in their space after having suffered some traumas.
Listen, I worked, so 10 years of my adult life, we're about to go to a break, but 10 years of my adult life was spent working with kids in ministry and counseling. And there was a big chunk of that that was in an adolescent treatment center and with kids, many of whom had been abused. And it was just, it was, well, in fact, it was in their chart. If this girl has been through certain experiences with men, then men do not put themselves in a position of being, not just for the men's protection, but for the young lady's protection, mm-hmm, because of the effects that of these, this, their male presence can have on them.
Yep.
It's invasive. It creates a sense of insecurity, and it shouldn't have to be. All right, listen, we're going to take a break right now, and we will come right back. I got a studio full of Amazon warriors right now who are ready to go to battle on the issue of saving Title IX. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower, which, by the way, I feel like is what we're talking about. I'm in studio right now with three ladies who just formed an organization that is euphemistically called STICS, which stands for Saving Title, Roman numeral 9. So I'm here with Emily, Dee, and Lee. And listen, I got to tell you, one of the things that really gets me is that the left has pushed this mantra of transgenders and, you know, males being allowed to participate in female sports and the whole thing, and you should just accept it. Why would you question it? This is, how dare you? This is someone's truth. Question their truth. And nothing about it biologically or grammatically, for that matter, matches with what is actual truth. That being said, it was Justice Ginsburg on the Supreme Court of the United States who herself years ago, and I quoted it when I wrote a piece about Target trying to, you know, get in the idea of doing, you know, transgender bathrooms back in the, you know, 10 years ago. Justice Ginsburg said that women had a right to expect privacy and security in the places that were designed for women. And people don't realize that even Alabama, the state law of Alabama, affords a woman a right of security, mm-hmm, in the places that are designed for women. So what they had to do to get around that was redefine what woman is.
Right.
Yep.
And that's why they believe they can beat up on Title IX, mm-hmm, because they have redefined what woman is. So you went from having Justice Ginsburg on the Supreme Court, a very liberal justice, to now you have Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, who can't even define a woman during her confirmation hearings.
Neither can the state of Alabama, just to clarify.
Right.
Okay.
Three years running, we still can't define it. So.
Pray tell, what do you mean?
Well, we can't pass legislation that defines male and female into law.
Oh,
so.
Okay. You're right.
So Susan, there's that fun fact.
Susan DeBose is going to do it this year. She's going to get it done.
Well, let's hope that Susan DeBose can rally up enough members to get it passed.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
For some reason, they don't want to get involved. And it boggles mm-hmm. my mind.
Yep.
But I do recall. Let's all right. You have formed, I'm pointing at Emily, you have formed a 501c3 in the past and started it from scratch, even though it kind of existed. Well, the Title IX, saving Title IX as a thought is out there. There are other champions of the issue. We mentioned Riley Gaines mm-hmm. a minute ago, and we've got others we'll talk about in a minute. But forming it from scratch, talk about the business side of that. Like, did you know what you were doing when you started?
I still don't know what I'm doing. I never know what I'm doing. I just kind of throw spaghetti at the wall and see what sticks. No, but I have absolutely no clue. The difference when I said Moms for Liberty is we had a little go-to sheet. It was literally one page that said, click here, select this box. It was that dumbed down. So I at least had a guide on this one. No clue, but... Yeah, we just figure it out.
But that's the thing. You didn't have to have a clue. And we're about to take another break. We got a mandatory break. We got to take the top of the hour. But that's the thing is you guys, you started something. And my point there was you didn't know everything about it when you got busy.
No.
Mm-hmm. You just had a passion for something.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And that in that case, the Moms for Liberty was because of what happened with your son and things you knew weren't right.
Yep.
And so you just said, let's do this thing.
Yeah, something's got to change. Why not start here?
The first time radio show, you were like almost shy, like, okay, what do I say?
Yes, but I practiced for weeks.
Now you got a podcast and you do this thing and you're like, so the lesson learned there is that you guys are starting something right now. And I know you don't know everything about the practicalities of what you're going to do, but by God, you're going to do something. And that's the thing I think that a lot of people lose sight of is sometimes it's just having the passion and the drive to go and to do that makes all the difference in the world. Yep. Sometimes, and I don't mean like you're reckless. That's not what I'm saying. But sometimes you just got to get started.
And just the put rest one foot in front of the other.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Wait, now I'm going to sing that because that was a song from like Santa Claus and Claymation. All right, listen, we're going to have a great conversation. We're going to talk about San Jose State. We're going to talk about women's locker rooms. We're going to talk about all the stuff and turds in a punch bowl. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh, yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number three. As Emily is like tearing up stuff here in the studio. Just just come in and wreck stuff. That's
my hair is all over the place, and I'm leaving it. I can't help it.
Hey, listen, I want to. I did move the camera. I apologize. By the way, we're streaming live right now. I got three folks in the studio with JP and I. It's a crowded room, but that just makes it more fun. So let me do this. We were talking about something during the break, legislation. There's going to have to be legislation in some states. And I don't think anybody should ever imagine that because we're a so-called red state that Alabama is just safe. No need to do anything here. Mm-mm. I mean, the NCAA has a presence here. The SEC has its and you can find everything from DEI on college campuses, you know, things that are being put in, like a gen, what I'm trying to say. That are here as much as they're anywhere else. You may not have some of the more vocal aspects of the liberal counterculture, which includes the men and women sports. But nonetheless, we should not take for a second the idea that it's never going to be here for granted. Your thoughts on that?
I think one of the biggest dangers with and why we are founding and starting Saving Title IX is because meant on the left is, well, it's not that common. There's not that many athletes who are, you know, competing in female sports, and there's not that many. But my, of course, perspective is, well, how many is too many?
Yeah, exactly.
We're up to 900 over covering 600 sports and 400 female athletes who have lost out because they had to compete against men. How many is too many?
Yep.
And I don't think that, to your point, Phil, I don't think that it in any way to our benefit to just get complacent and say, well, it's not hit home yet. It's not in our territory. It's not at the Alabama yet. It's not at the in the SEC yet or whatever. Actually, it is. It hit Kentucky, but with Riley Gaines. But, you know, because it's not in our exact backyard, we can't get complacent about that and say, well, it's, you know, it's over. It's somebody else's problem. No, it's every female athlete's problem if it's one female athlete's problem. And that's my attitude about it. And even though I had never had to compete against a male, I cannot imagine what it's like to actually train as hard as we train.
Yep.
For the number of years that we train. I mean, before you get to college, it's 10 years minimum. I started when I was 4, so that was 13 years in for me before I even set foot on a college campus that I've trained, worked my butt off, you know, trained 8-10 hours a day, competed, traveled, not to mention the expense that my parents had to kick out, my mom had to kick out for my gymnastics career, and that was with being a national team member, right? It's a lot of money. And so with all of that sacrifice that goes into it, if it all just sort of gets, the rug gets pulled out from under you, when you're sort of cresting, right, the pinnacle of your career, which for a lot of people, college is not a four-year retirement party. It is very competitive. Yeah. And it is, you know, where you actually get to be on it. Some, you know, in gymnastics, for example, you get to be on a team for the first time. You know, in club gymnastics, there is the national team, you know, the USA team and the team, but that's not really the team. That's not really a team. It's a bunch of, it's several girls who are duking and fighting for each other's position. So college is a very different scenario, and being able to have, you know, that team first time is really critical to development.
And let me ask you this. So you are obviously a star athlete at Alabama, and you're from...
I am. I'm from Huntsville.
So, but did you get recruited by other colleges outside of the state?
I got recruited by every college. I was the number one recruit in the country.
All right. So you could wind up saying, well, it's not in our backyard, and yet you get recruited by a school that very much is.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I was recruited by UCLA and Utah. I mean, the top, when I was competing, there was just a handful of schools who had won the national championship. It was Utah, it was Georgia, it was Alabama, and UCLA hadn't even won one yet. So those were really the top three schools that had won a national championship. And so it was, but overnight, my freshman class was really when a lot of national team members and Olympians were foregoing money to compete in college and to be able to have their amateur status preserved. So that I was the first class where that really happened, and it got really competitive overnight. And so I if I had been considering another school outside the SEC, which of course I wasn't, but if I had been and that were a conversation, I would have canceled that out immediately.
All right. So Lee, we're sitting here during the break, and it was brought up that of the three of you, you're the only one who has a daughter.
Right.
So, as your daughter was a high school athlete,
mm-hmm.
who had potential to have played above high school if she'd wanted to pursue that. And what, softball was it?
Softball. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, you look at this and go, okay, I'm the mom of a daughter. How would I react? How would if your daughter did choose to go down that road, and you were the mom who suddenly saw your daughter competing against a dude, what would Mama Bear say about it?
No way, because you have to think about how much stronger boys are in high school than girls. They're much stronger. And she was a pitcher, and she's pitching against a male who's hitting. Mm. He could kill her hitting her in the head, mm-hmm. you know, hitting that ball as hard. I mean, the girls injure other girls, and it's so dangerous.
Like
they're so
player.
Much stronger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the volleyball player in high school that,
still has brain damage.
Yeah, the girl's still suffering now from double vision. The one who got spiked by the, I think that was college. Was it college or high school? But it was so hard that she has double vision. She has neurological problems. I mean, it's real, and men can injure girls.
It's real. So there's the reality of potential harm. There's the reality we talked about a while ago of the lack of a sense of security and just the defying of cultural norms. And then there's the part you talked about too, Dee, with the number of years and the amount of expense that goes into it to suddenly have it ripped away from you because someone wants to pretend they're something that they're not. And that's maddening. And
it's mediocre males. They want to be a success, and so they can go into female sports and be number one. Look at the fencer that just he left male fencing, and he was like 400, and then won the women's.
Yeah, I mean the dude that competed against Riley was 240 something mm-hmm. ranked in men's swimming, and then number one in women's swimming. I mean mm-hmm. this is not. I mean we don't. The math ain't mathin'.
right?
No, it ain't. It ain't mathing at all. And you know, at some point, there's going to wind up. And what I'm concerned about is if some of these schools and the NCAA, for that matter, the NCAA could take care of it right now, as a blanket organization, they could. They could take the umbrella and say, we're no longer going to sanction this. Stop it. But then there comes times like what we saw San Jose State. Mm-hmm. All right. So this to me is one of the hero stories. San Jose State girls volleyball. They have a dude playing on the girls team and the girls don't want him on their team.
Mm-mm.
You had multiple other teams that said, you're bringing what to our match?
Mm-hmm.
How about this? We're not playing.
Mm-hmm.
There were other teams. I think Boise State was one of them. There was in Utah.
Five schools, really, I think.
Five schools chose to just take the loss. We'll just go ahead and put the L in our column. We're fine. We're not playing you.
Mm-hmm. And it cost them. It cost them, you know, the chance to play for a national championship. It cost them. It cost the girls.
Mm-hmm. They did. And but here's the thing. I don't think this will change until more people, as a matter of principle, are willing to say, by God, I am not doing it.
Right.
Yeah. Yep.
So stop trying to pretend that it's okay.
Yep.
I find it very telling that it was a California school. I mean, the most left of all the left states, arguably, is California. I find it interesting that it was San Jose State, which Northern California is even more leftist than anywhere else in the state. So I find it very interesting that that's the school that put their foot down. That's the group of athletes who put their foot down. Now, I don't know if they're all native Californians, but there was consensus there, and they got the backing of the program. So that's a big deal.
Now they've got skin in the game, and they're saying no.
But if I'm not mistaken, the school itself didn't support the girls. The girls had to sue the school.
Right.
So the girls on the team, and the coach, actually had to file suit against their own school, didn't
they?
Well, when I say the program, I meant the coach.
Okay.
Let's
be clear.
That's college athlete talk, you think of the program as the head coach is running the program. Yeah.
In this case, the athletic director was no help whatsoever.
No.
So and neither was the NCAA.
So he now gets to do a deposition in a lawsuit. Whoop, whoop.
Yeah. Whoop. Yeah. Enjoy that.
All right, so we got plenty of work to do, and we got to take a break right now. Again, you guys are like, this is blowing by. This is 45 minutes already. What the heck? All right, I love it when people come
time
to the studio.
Time flies when you're pissed off.
Yeah, exactly. All right, I'm muting her mic right now. All right, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We are taking a break, and we'll come right back with the ladies of Styx. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just pulling pins on truth grenades. Hey, by the way, I just got a text a moment ago. Casey from Huntsville. We went to high school together. He just told me, I won't say his last name on the air, but nonetheless, Casey, good to hear from you, man, and great to check in. I love it when the class of 83 shows up. This is good. You are officially listed in the Ruffians Register, my friend, so good to hear from you, Casey, and yep, go class of 83. All right, so legislation. You know, we're sitting here during the break a minute ago, and we were talking about the fact that, you know, it's real easy for us to just focus on just the sports. I mean, just the sport. That is definitely a big-ticket item. That is definitely one that gets a lot of attention. The clickbait is on what's happening in the sports arena. But people don't realize that all of this floods into every aspect of what Title IX is designed to protect. And Title IX does so much more than just women's sports. It's like everything in the educational arena, things that relate to and so it can be everything from locker room space to ensuring that girls are giving an academic opportunity that guys are getting and that no one is getting to also be offered to girls and yada, yada. So that being said, it doesn't have to all be sports-related legislation. I'm looking at Emily right now. What do you know about what we can do in state legislature that could deal with this or have an impact?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of bills because, again, I'm going to redefine Title IX back to what Biden's called it, right? Because we're used to Title IX being sports. They made it everything plus. So, I mean, we've got legislation right now for next year that deals with not only just women's bathrooms and all that, but we now have to deal with legislation that gets gender ideology out of K-12 schools.
Yep.
Because that's now rolled in there. Pronoun usage, free speech. I mean, this rewrite affected all of it. So we've got Susan's bill next year that's going to codify male and female into law, which will protect women's spaces, bathrooms, changing rooms, locker rooms, all that. We've got Mac Butler's bill that's going to deal with gender ideology in the classrooms through K-12, also going to deal with pronouns and flags and all the crap they stick on the walls that deal with it. You've got Scott Stadhagen is passing or filing legislation that deals with drag shows in public schools now because that's allowed somehow. So there's a lot of legislation at the libraries. We've talked about that so many times, the stuff that's in the books, online and on the shelves. So there's a lot of legislation that's got to be passed in every state, not just Alabama, to combat all this. Because the rewrite from Biden may go away. It doesn't mean that the agenda's going away. Yeah. And people are still pushing that.
That's a great point. I think people need to recognize that the rewrite from the Biden Department of Education, the effort there, did not happen overnight. It didn't spring up out of nowhere. It didn't have some unilateral opportunity that arose in the mind of a Biden administration flunky. It was an outside agenda that wormed its way in and got some ground that it
started with Obama.
It was a trial balloon, really. I think just to indicate what's to come, because they're trying to normalize all of this about it. All of this is normalizing in your everyday thought, like this. Trans women are women. That if they say it enough, they want to normalize everyone's speech, everyone's thought. Yeah. It's 1984.
It's Marxism playbook. Yeah.
It's like 1984. You go back and just redefine everything.
Yep. Yeah. We're suddenly in some kind of an episode of Animal Farm, where you know groupthink is required.
Or a Paul Harvey broadcast where he talked about if I were the devil. Remember that one?
Oh yeah. 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 That was very prescient, by the way. Yeah. I've read that one on the air before.
He was right on.
Paul Harvey was always right on.
Oh yeah,
he was amazing.
I remember listening to him as a kid.
If I ever had somebody say you're like the modern Paul Harvey, I would feel like I was done. I had met my retirement. That's right.
Holy grail.
Call me done.
Yeah. Phil, you have a daughter. Can you imagine having to worry if your daughter went on an overnight? You know, say she's in high school and she's going on a field trip. It's going overnight. Can you imagine having to worry that they might put her with a boy in her room?
Listen, so my daughter, in her sport was tennis in high school, but she also cheered. But my daughter had an Army Ranger for a dad who probably would have found means to exert himself had the opportunity arisen. But you know, I look at it like we had the situation with Space Camp last year, and my daughter went to Space Camp as a kid. And I cannot imagine sending my daughter for a week of camp not being told that they house, you know, a boy in the girls' room.
Right.
And some of them, by the way, they're not just in like, you know, bunk rooms. They're sharing a room, and you've got a boy being now housed with a girl in a little cubby room. Mm-hmm. And that's just like layers of wrong.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It also presumes so much. It's like, well, why would you question? What are you questioning me for?
But we now had to have legislation to prevent that. Because that's the upside down world we're in. We have to into law, and a state agency may not allow men into women's bathrooms. No, let me rephrase that. Men into girls' bathrooms because these are minors.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have to have state laws for that now.
But you know what? If that's what it takes, we'll do it.
Yep. Thank you, Scott Stadhagen.
Yeah. We'll get her done. But the reality is we are at the Mad Hatter's Tea Party.
Yes. Yeah.
We don't have to drink the tea, you know? Yeah. And I think that's the important piece. All right, listen, we're gonna wind up taking a break. You guys want to hang around a little bit longer?
Sure.
All right, I wanna get.
I mean, I drove 8 hours just to be on this show. I'm going right back to Charlotte as soon as we wrap. So.
Lord, wow.
I'm kidding.
She's not.
Somebody get her a T-shirt. All right, when we get back from this, what I want to do is I want you guys to tell me if all things worked out to the best that you could possibly hope for Styx. A year from now, what would it look like? All right, I want to go down that road. Let's spitball and dream a little bit on what that could mean. All right, I am sitting in studio right now with three ladies who did not sit idle. They decided to get busy. They formed the actual 501c3 entity to go out and do something that they feel passionate about, and that is basically preserving women's rights in the public arena. Why is that so controversial? I have no idea why that would be controversial. In fact, let's be honest. It's not controversial. What's controversial is that we're having to talk about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. I mean it when I say it. It's the one I'm sitting in. Don't argue with me. It's Alabama. Y'all, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gaston, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, even Mississippi, all thrown in. just for good measure. All right, which is a big swath of the SEC. Although we got the new SEC, so there's a lot of other places now. But, you know, the core of the SEC is still here. Speaking of which, I'm sitting here with three ladies who are intent upon impacting culture, which I love. That's what I say my calling is. My calling is to impact culture. You guys have formed this organization, ST9, STIX, Saving Title IX, and we've been talking about it for the last hour. You're just getting the organization itself going, although the passion's obviously been there for a bit. All right, nothing new there. But let me just go down the line. What do you like a year from now? Best case scenario, STIX is working and doing what? Like for Emily, what are you saying?
I want us to be the advisor to legislators across the country. Advising on.
No, that's the right word.
Dictating is the right word. What legislation should look like? What are the loopholes? How do we close those? How do we really put legislation in place that protects
that's
young
cool.
girls?
And you know, and I know we talked about it during the breaks, but there are organizations that already exist that take model legislation and fan it out to the states. Mm-hmm. That, you know, you get in with one of those, you can see your stuff go exponential much quicker.
Yep.
All right. Very cool. All right. So legislative impact across the nation.
Yep.
All right. Dee, what are you thinking a year from now? Where would you like to see this go?
Well, considering that University of Kentucky was the first SEC school that was negatively impacted by this with Riley and the swimming scenario. And so it's already infiltrated the SEC. I would love to see Saving Title IX have presence in all SEC schools in the form of advocacy. And who I really want to see involved in that advocacy is the parents of the athletes. They are suspiciously quiet.
Yeah, they are.
And,
you're right.
And I don't know what the reason is for that. I don't know if they just don't want to upset the apple cart or what. But we saw on November 5th what happened when people stopped being concerned about what other people think.
Oh, yeah.
And telling the truth. Unabashedly and unapologetically. And so I would love to see from the athletic side, the parents of these student athletes getting real vocal and advocating for their daughters.
I think that's huge. And I think, you know what, it's also, that's where parenting is a stewardship. And your
yes.
child is your greatest gift you've ever been given.
Yes.
And so if you're not speaking out, shame on you.
Absolutely.
But yeah, okay, all right. So I that's two of you. Lee, a year from now, what are you thinking? What would you like to see?
I'd like to be pushing for people to run for office locally, statewide, even federal office, that care about women's spaces and women's rights as one of their platforms, mm-hmm. and push people to just get involved. Especially local and state, they affect your life so much more than even federal politics, even whoever's the president. And just push for more people to get involved and just knowledge for them to understand. Most people don't understand how the changes in Title IX were going to affect their kids. And people need to understand what they had in mind because it's going to come back again.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's coming back. Yeah. And they need to be able to recognize it and stand up and say no.
Yeah. And that's how the left does it. I mean, yeah. they have been absolutely, they win the grassroots game
mm-hmm.
every time. Like, they are dominating the grassroots game on the state level, on the local level. And that's where they're kicking the right's tail, you know, year in and year. They don't wait till the fourth year when it's election season.
Right.
They're doing it all the time. So we've got to get just as, I agree with you, we've got to get just as active in that way.
Well, yeah. I think that's huge. I mean, you guys labeled, that's an ambitious plan, but it's also doable. You know,
mm-hmm.
you got the idea of model legislation going everywhere and being able to advise legislators how best to accomplish, you know, what your organization stands for. You're talking about getting the parents active and engaged and being in the actual SEC schools and providing influence to the programs. And then you're talking about finding candidates to run for office who will stand up for the stuff when they get elected,
mm-hmm.
Which is huge. And also, I would say probably making sure that those who do get elected remember where they came from.
Exactly.
And mm-hmm. and remind them what the grassroots cares about. And you do all that stuff, and you will change the world.
Yep.
And that's a lot of stuff.
I mean, look at the library. Look what a small group of women,
yep.
concerned, yep. and men, Moms for Liberty and other groups got together and said, we can't, you know, this can't be tolerated to have something akin to porn in the library, in the public mm-hmm. library. And a small group made a big difference
mm-hmm. yeah,
in the entire state. Small and mighty can make a difference.
Well, and the one of the best examples for me is the National Organization of Moms for Liberty that you're affiliated with, Emily. Two moms got uppity and decided to go ahead and say something that nobody else wanted to hear. Mm-hmm. And apparently they are now a national organization.
Yeah.
And like in a very short amount of time, too, by the way.
And the funny thing about Moms for Liberty is it started when it started one mom. One mom went to one school board meeting and spoke out for her child. And because of that, Tiffany, who was reluctant to start Moms for Liberty, went home in tears that night and called Tina and said, now is the time.
Because
one mom went and spoke out for her daughter.
That's awesome.
Yep.
Well, it's also about breaking ice and, you know, empowering the parents, empowering the athletes to recognize that, oh, yeah, it is okay to say something.
Mm-hmm.
And we mentioned a moment ago during the break, so I'm pointing my finger at Dee now. So, Dee, you were the first black member of the gymnastics team, the female gymnastics team at Alabama.
Yes.
You were an icebreaker way back.
Yes. You don't have to say way back.
So a million years ago.
I'm going to need you to stop doing that.
When Methuselah was a child. But you've been an icebreaker. And I don't know how that felt, whether it was uncomfortable, awkward, or felt like you were like leading a charge. I don't know how you felt, but I think this is an icebreaker moment for y'all right now, with sticks is the way it feels to me.
Absolutely. I mean, there are other organizations. One that comes to mind is ICONS, which is the Independent Council on Women's Sports. That is the organization that is actually suing the NCAA right now. So there's a lot of groundbreakers that have come before us, but I think that there, you know, as with everything, there's room for everybody to contribute what they are gifted and skilled by God to be able to contribute. And, you know, you've just heard the three of us talk about what our aspirational goals are. If we could write the script in the next year, what it would look like, and we each have different strengths where we could, you know, absolutely facilitate that happening. So there's room for everybody to sort of get in where they fit in. Mm-hmm. And there's so much work to be done that, you know, I think another one of the things we want to do is mobilize as well. I mean, we really need an army to deal with this because, you know, tiny and mighty is great, but also there's strength in numbers and influence is important as well.
I'll wear that t-shirt.
Thank you. Thank you. You kind of have to. You're a board member.
That's right. I am proud to be the guy who helped draft some of the paperwork for you guys and get
you
all started.
Thank you so much for that.
It's just, listen, I am more than impressed. This is exactly what this show stands for. I have, from the day we started this show and now a company that does podcasting and everything else, it was, I said, I don't want to be doing this if I'm just me talking to a microphone and nobody listens. Mm-hmm. And we've been blessed with an audience who's now got the chance to hear you guys for 15 minutes. But that's exactly what this show is about, is empowering other people. And I'm getting to watch you guys go out and empower people, which just fires me up. So thank you for what you're doing.
Glory to God.
Absolutely. So get her done. All right.
Get her done.
Get her done. All right. I'll tell you what, let's do. JP, let's take the break about a minute and a half early. And I appreciate you guys being here in studio with us. It means a lot having you in studio. It actually makes it more fun.
It is. What
we've had a blast.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, JP, take us to the break, brother. When I hear the music playing, I'll know we're on the way out the door. We got text messages. You guys want to text in? You can. It's 833-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. And I'd love to get your thoughts and opinions on where sticks ought to go. Are you going to play music or I just keep talking? Did I jump the gun on you? You weren't ready?
I'm telling Coach P.
We're taking a break. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just pulling pins on truth grenades. That's what we've been doing. Listen, that was a hoot, wasn't it? That was absolutely a hoot.
I think that's the most people we've had in studio here so far. At least when I've been here.
I don't know. I mean, I've had two join me before, and then I've had like somebody come in and kept a guest kind of standing outside, you know, watching through the window. But I don't know that we've ever had five people sitting in this wonderful little studio.
I think
it's very crowded.
I think that's the max, though. I don't think we're getting four people in here.
I'm saying we could do six next time.
Yeah. Stick one in the corner back
there. That's right, exactly. Now, that was great, and I love that. I love watching people who have a godly, conservative perspective on life. Their worldview is, you know, a match to ours, deciding they're going to get busy on stuff, and that's just very cool. Do you have that sound clip, by the way, of John Kennedy wearing out Charlie, is it Charlie Baker? Is that his name? Yeah, Charlie Baker.
Charlie Baker,
the NCAA president. You say his name like Charlie Baker.
Dude, I got, listen, this is just the tip of the iceberg with this guy. You go into NIL or anything, and it's just pure incompetence from him. So,
how did he get his job?
I don't know. He's a former governor of a state. I don't know what state it is off the top of my head, but it was a bureaucratic, you know, he fits the role.
Was he
for
a
that.
Democrat?
I believe so. Let me actually look that up.
You know what? If he was a Democrat, I'm going to go see. If he was a Republican, I'm going to go, what?
He's the former governor of Massachusetts. He actually was a Republican.
Shut up.
So
stop it.
It's hard to. Well, he's probably a soft, smushy Republican.
He's a Massachusetts Republican.
He's a Massachusetts Republican.
That's right.
There you go,
which
yeah.
is like saying a Democrat in Alabama.
Yeah.
We got a sound clip right now. Senator John Kennedy was raking him over the coals. Let's play a little bit of it and see how it goes.
Interject, yeah.
And I'll interject as we go. All right, go ahead.
EAA exists in part to promote fair competition in collegiate sports, does it not? Yes. Could you speak into the mic for me?
Yes.
Okay. A transgender woman is a biological male. Is that correct?
Yes.
And a biological male is always going to have a physical and a physiological advantage competing in a collegiate sport against a biological female. Isn't that true?
There's not a lot of research on it, but it's certainly debatable.
Not a lot of research.
You think it's debatable?
I think it's debatable.
You don't think that a biological male has an advantage every time competing against a biological female. Is that your testimony?
No, I think defined the way you defined it, yes, I would agree with you.
So you agree with me?
Yes.
Okay. So why is the NCAA, why do you, your job is to promote fairness in collegiate sports. Why do you support allowing transgender women who are biological males to compete against non-transgender biological females?
Over the course of the past 2 years, 5 federal court cases involving this question, let me finish.
Whoa.
5 federal judges have all sided with participation as the standard.
Oh my God.
This is a very.
So you're saying you don't have a choice?
I'm saying that under the current dynamic, there is not clarity on this issue legally.
Well, why don't you exhibit leadership and demonstrate leadership and provide clarity? If you agree
that the purpose of
the NCAA is to promote fair competition, and if you agree with me that in every single instance a biological male is going to have an unfair advantage over a biological female.
Are you believing this? This is crazy.
Then why don't you just say, look, in America, you can be whomever you want to be. But in terms of fair competition and a collegiate sport, transgender women who are biological males are not going to be allowed to compete against non-transgender women who are biological female. Boom, done. Why don't you go to Amazon and buy a spine online and take a stand?
Stop it there. That's the line. Why don't you go to Amazon and buy a spine and take a stand? Listen, that's exactly what we're talking about. So what you just heard there was someone who has been placed in a position of authority who does not understand what leadership means. Because there are going to be times when, I think it was Margaret Thatcher. It was Margaret Thatcher who said the true consensus is the absence of leadership. True consensus is the absence of leadership. What does that mean? What it basically means is there will be times when someone has to say, follow me, and no one else is already saying it. That means that someone had to step out and say a thing that broke the ice. Someone had to step out and say a thing and go somewhere and do something that other people weren't already willing to do in order to rally people to do it with them. True consensus is the absence of leadership. If everyone always agrees, if all there is just consensus, everyone agrees, then no one's leading. And what he has basically said was, sir, you are in charge of the NCAA. You're in charge of these sports, these programs. You set the standards they have to go by. You're the governing authority for all of this. You could change it today. And what did he do? He deferred. Well, you know, court cases and clarity and and thing. He kept clearing his throat.
Let me finish.
Let me finish.
Let me finish saying my written out statement. That means nothing, you know. God. That's the NCAA to a T. And like I said, it's not even the tip of the iceberg when they weren't prepared for NIL and the transfer portal and all that when they introduced it. They're not wanting to get canceled, and they're wanting to, you know, the federal courts will decide it. Well, the federal courts didn't make them do anything, so they can stand up and do whatever they want, really. It's just them not – it's them choosing to do nothing is what it is, and they're not willing to take a stand. He doesn't have a spine, like Kennedy said there. It's just – it's bureaucratic incompetence is what the NCAA is.
It absolutely is. And, you know, you said something about they got caught off guard by NIL. They got caught off guard by the portal. They got caught off guard by maybe even this situation here with the transgenders in sports. I understand that sometimes things arise that you didn't see coming, but the reality is they can't use that as an excuse forever, because once you've seen it coming, then you have to decide what to do with it. So they're now in the mode where if – all right, you know what? Let's go ahead and say most of the world didn't see men competing in women's sports and it being condoned. But now that it's happened, what are you going to do? You can't just keep saying, well, you know, other people, things, and we don't understand in the courts and where's clarity? Clarity. What clarity do you need, sir? You're in charge.
They have a leader for a reason, you know.
You're the definer of clarity. You're the person who's been given the right to basically provide clarity. People turn to you for clarity, and you got no clarity.
I love the part where he said, biological men have a physiological advantage over biological women, right? Well, that's debatable. There's not a lot of research done on that. There doesn't need to be research. Just use your eyes
and
watch it.
And then he got caught, and he goes, well, I mean, I guess if I go with your definition a moment ago, then I would have to say then yes. Brian from Huntsville just texted in. He says, don't opine, buy a spine. There you go. Jeff from Indiana says, hey, Phil, took a little Christmas vacation to St. Louis, Missouri. Oh, yeah, look at that. There's the arch. Jeff Rowe, we'll talk to you soon, man. Have a great weekend. John N. from Huntsville says, why not just have a separate category for transgender athletes so that they can compete against others of equal capacity? Another possibly related question is, how many transgender demanding playing time and scholarships or even recognition playing men's sports? None. There's none. All right, great show. Listen, great amazing. Just remember, there are more of us than there are of them. God is still on his throne. Y'all stay in the fight. We'll see you Monday.